right, everybody. Welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm your host, Bryce. You know me. You definitely know Pizza Mind, my notorious co-host. You're hanging in there, Pete, throughout all this volatility?
Bryce, this shit is bananas. Every day is like another episode of Sons of Anarchy Finance Edition.
It's wild, man. We have never seen a market quite like this. You know, I was too young to really know what was going on in 2008, but now I turn on CNBC and it seems like just about every day, another bank has failed, or the you know, Janet Yellen's calling an emergency meeting to figure out what's going on. So we brought on an expert in the finance, in the banking community. He's run hedge funds, he's written books. In fact, people who are listening to this right now have probably read one of his books. We got James Altucher here on the show to kind of walk us through what's going on in the world at a high level. Last time we had James on, he talked about the Great Reset, and he was flaming about it, and he was very passionate, and now we've seen this all unfold, so he's very present. James, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Bryce, so excited, and Aaron as well, so excited to be on the podcast. Yeah, I remember the last time I was on, I had such a fun time. And Bryce, you've been really doing a great job sending out emails every day, keeping people informed of what's going on. I always read your stuff and watch a lot of your webinars and so on. So you're one of my sources for finding out what's going on.
Thank you, dude. Thank you. Yeah, we put a lot of time and energy into just staying on top of the crypto markets. At the end of the day, there's a lot going on. It moves quick. And, you know, we built up a team that's really passionate and loves it. And, you know, I think required reading as well is some James Altucher literature. You know, I think that everybody who's listening should go and cop one of your books on Amazon. But James,
absolutely.
James,
and thank you.
Go ahead.
Oh, go for it, Aaron. What were you going to say?
I was going to say a required listing would be our last recording as well, where you predicted the huge rise of the dollar. It was right after $4 trillion had just been printed in stimulus. Mm. Bryce and I and everyone else in the crypto industry is going, you know, Bitcoin's going to a million. This is insane. And you actually had the contrarian point of view that said, actually, the demand for the dollar is actually outpacing the increase in supply, and we're actually going to be in a deflationary stage. You saw it when no one else was coming. The dollar then ripped up for one of its best runs ever.
Yeah, so, I mean, even now you can say, oh, well, look at all the inflation. Let me tell you, if it wasn't for the fact that every other country in the world is buying the dollar hand over fist, inflation would be a lot greater than it is now. And in fact, we're starting to see disinflation, of course, in the past few months. And this story is still playing out. But back in 2020, I mean, we all know this now in retrospect, but so many people were saying, look, we got to close down every single business on the planet so people don't get sick. And whether or not that was true or not, it was important to note, and this is what we were noting on that episode, you can't just flip a switch and turn the entire global economy on and off. And now we're facing the consequences that the bill is due. And I'm not a doom and gloomer. I'm optimistic, right? But there are problems.
So now we're seeing some similarities. The Fed just extended another $4.4 trillion in credit to the banks. We're hearing the same. Bitcoin's going to a million again. This time, is it different or is it the same story as before?
A little bit of both. I mean, it's never totally the same, but let's take those two issues one at a time. And the first question, that the Fed is getting ready to lend $4 trillion to the banks. This is okay. Like, this is not what people think. You know, the media, which really doesn't know anything, like, I've worked at the Wall Street Journal, I've worked at the Financial Times, I've been a contributor to CNBC and Fox Business and all that. They just know nothing. And it's disgusting how they report the news. Like, how many headlines do I have to read? Like, the world is over, you know, before I just say, just shut up. And that's like the past 30 years. You see those headlines every year. Yeah. So, you know, here's what happened. Just at a 10,000 or 100,000 foot level, banks all the time, you put money in a bank. Okay, you, Bryce, Aaron, we all put money in a bank. We put it in a savings account. The bank says, okay, you put money in a savings account. We're going to give you 1% on your money per year. And all along, the banks take your money and they make investments. Now, usually they make investments in super safe treasury bills. So last year, I'm just making this up, treasury bills might have been yielding 3%. Fast forward a year later, now the new treasury bills are yielding 5%. So no one's going to buy your shitty treasury bill for 3% when you could buy a new one for 5%. So when there is a hypothetical run on the banks and the banks say, uh-oh, we need to raise cash, let's sell our treasury bills, they're not selling it for what they paid for it. They're selling it for less because the interest rate is now higher. So the interest rate they bought is worthless. So part of this is, couldn't they hedge their risk? Well, no, because the Federal Reserve's raised interest rates at the fastest pace ever. There was no way to hedge that. So, but here's what the Fed is doing. These investments the bank's been making, as opposed to what they were doing in 2008, they are riskless investments. They're basically lending money to the U.S. government with the idea that in 5 or 10 or 30 years, the U.S. government will pay them back, as opposed to in 2008, banks were making super high risk leveraged investments. These investments that banks are making, they're going to get paid back. If you bought $100 worth of treasury bills, you're not going to lose money in the long run. You're going to get your whole $100 back. If you have to sell now, it's unfortunate you would lose money. So the Federal Reserve knows this. The Federal Reserve has opened up a new lending facility to banks that says, hey, we know these investments are going to be paid back in full. So we'll lend you money on whatever you paid for those treasury bills. We know we're going to get paid back. We're going to charge you interest, so we're going to make money. It's going to cost the taxpayer nothing. That's what's happening in terms of that $4 trillion lending facility. It's not like what they did at the beginning of a pandemic where they just airdropped $1 trillion worth of cash on the public. It's different. This really, makes the banking system safe, at least as far as depositors go, not necessarily shareholders. So that in that sense, the banking system is safe. So I answered the part one of your question. Part two is, are we going to experience deflation? The answer is yes, because the Federal Reserve, and this is going to lead to crypto, the Federal Reserve has choked the economy to death. Back in March 2020, the Federal Reserve was worried that they would never get inflation ever again. And you need inflation to kind of have a small amount of inflation to have a good, healthy, growing economy. So they dropped the $4 trillion in the beginning of the pandemic, thinking maybe this will cause inflation. Well, yes, it did to some extent. There's some transitory stuff too. But now they've choked the economy to death. What's going to happen when we actually feel it? We haven't felt the effects of these interest rates yet, by the way. It takes 12 to 18 months. What's going to happen when we feel the effects? We're going to get a recession. We're already seeing disinflation and some deflation in the system. We're going to get deflation. I don't know what it is. The federal government just shot themselves in the foot, and they're going to have to reverse at some point.
Yeah, it's a catch 22. I mean, they're in between a rock and a hard place, and they've made their bets. Jerome Powell said he's going to keep interest rates higher for longer, and it's kind of, he's hoping that the free market kind of maybe corrects itself, that we're going to get lots of deflationary pressure because some of these regional banks aren't going to be extending credit and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, it feels like. And again, maybe this is just an arbitrary feeling, but it feels like somewhere in all these headlines and all these emergency meetings and all these liquidity facilities and, not bailouts, but, really smoothing things over, it seems like somewhere the taxpayer is going to get screwed over here. And it seems like somewhere along the way, the shell game is going to, kind of get revealed, and, people need insurance against that. And I think that's where crypto comes in. Do you kind of agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't necessarily. Here's the real worry, because there's things happening globally that are scarier than these bank collapses. Like, China just brokered relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Now China is visiting, the premier of China is visiting Russia. Well, what are all these countries have in common is they buy and sell oil. Guess what currency they use to buy and sell oil? U.S. dollars. That's why China has $2 trillion of our dollars. The biggest use case of the dollar is buying oil. Oil is priced in dollars. China, which needs a lot of oil, has $2 trillion of the dollars just to buy oil. They can't spend the dollars in China. They spend it on oil. So what happens when, just hypothetically, and this is just one problem, what happens when these countries say, screw the U.S. What good are they doing us right now? Let's just buy everything and sell everything in yuan. And
I see that this is what they're planning on doing. This is public, right?
Yeah. And again, when I say this is why the U.S. has for so long avoided such extreme inflation despite trillions of dollars being used in 2009, in 2020.
They exported all the inflation.
Yeah, they totally. And there's so much demand for the U.S. dollar from countries that need to buy oil and other things that keeps the price of the oil, that keeps the price of the dollar high, which means inflation's capped a little bit. But inflation will go through the roof if everyone says, maybe we don't need, let's just screw the U.S. and then we don't need the dollar as much. Then, and this is to your point, this is what crypto was made for. By the way, crypto has many, many uses now. Just like, the internet in 1972 was made for email. And over the next 50 years, many more use cases were found for the internet, including the web and then in social media and AI and all these other great things. But just like crypto, there's many more use cases than the original intent. But Satoshi Nakamoto specifically made Bitcoin in 2009 for this exact reason. Nobody, Jerome Powell, Janet Yellen, Jamie Dimon, some, ravingly mad bank offshore or whatever, or the Chinese or the Russians, nobody should have effect on the money that is in my pocket. I can go to sleep at night. The Fed drops $4 trillion overnight. The money in my pocket just changed in value. So Satoshi's goal was you can be your own bank. You could be your own banking system. You could be your own central bank. Just put your Bitcoin in a hard wallet, in a cold storage wallet, and you're safe when the dollar goes crazy, if the dollar goes crazy. And everyone in the U.S. sort of poo-poos this because the U.S. dollar has never faced a real issue. But every other country, by the way, is soaking it up in crypto. Like Argentina, which is one of the most volatile currencies out there, the government every day changes the value of their currency. Those guys, everybody, is a whole market in crypto. Like they, the day crypto purchases were made illegal, were more purchases than ever on that day from Argentina. Same with Iran. Same with countries in Africa. Same with countries all over South America. Like other countries understand why Bitcoin was created, and guess what? The U.S. is going to start to understand it too, which is why they're having a panic. Like guys like Jamie Dimon, on the one hand, he's saying, "Oh, I could use Bitcoin for toilet paper." And on the other hand, he's got the biggest crypto trading department on Wall Street. So, it's all insane what's going on, just to the lies and the hypocrisy. And I'm not a conspiratorial guy. I'm very optimistic. I am optimistic on innovation in US and we're the best country for that and on the planet. But I do think it's going to be ultimately fueled and funded by crypto.
To your point, while Chase is trading crypto on their desk, and I can personally vouch that there is a head of digital assets that now works at Bank of America, why then is the U.S. government and banking regulators attacking crypto so harshly right now? They're sending out arrest notices to celebrities, yet Jim Cramer gets to appear on TV every day, purposely misleading retail investors with every freaking call he makes. Just today, he's like, Deutsche Bank is fine. And one message, literally I have another message from private Singaporean bankers that have already figured out how to get customers out of Deutsche Bank because they know it's going to fail.
Well, here's the problem. And I'm going to get to the crypto one in a second. The real problem is every bank right now is technically bankrupt because they've all been buying for the past year, long-term duration U.S. Treasury bills. And those are all underwater. So technically, if you engineered a run on the banks on every bank, and the banks have to sell their treasury bills, they're all out of money. They're all bankrupt. Now, it's all psychology. Like, there shouldn't be a run on the banks, and the Fed has backstopped by saying, "Hey, we'll lend full value on the value of your bonds." So hopefully, again, that calms things. But Deutsche Bank is a German bank. Credit Suisse is a Swiss bank. So now they're kind of, the panic is going to settle in on banks outside the U.S. that might have had riskier assets. I don't know. But
that doesn't even include the derivatives bubble.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be that much problems on derivatives because, again, they're all, yes, those are risky assets, but really the assets that are bailing the depositors out are the safest investments. And there's been a lot of regulation since 2008. Like, banks investment are much more audited, much more regulated. At least in the U.S., they're a lot safer. But to the real point, which is, why are they all targeting crypto? I mean, there's the kind of long-term reason, which is, hey, we deal in cash, not crypto, so we don't want to go out of business. So that's kind of like the long-term reason. But there's another reason too, which people don't appreciate, which is that Silicon Valley and Wall Street have long been at war with each other. All the way back in the 90s, even, you know, companies like Amazon would go public at 20, and the end of that day of the IPO, the stock would be trading at 60. I don't know if that's true for Amazon, but that happened with a lot of internet companies and tech Silicon Valley companies. And Silicon Valley would say to Wall Street, what the hell are you doing? Why don't we go public at 60? We need to make the money, not just your customers. Like, we were raising money. This was really important to us. And Wall Street was like, sorry, we need to make our customers money. And that began this huge war. Like, if you look at like things like SPACs and Form 10 IPOs, there's all sorts of ways now Silicon Valley tries to bring companies public without using Wall Street. There's all sorts of ways Silicon Valley tries to lend money to startups without using Wall Street. That's what Silicon Valley Bank was for, by the way. So that's the first bank the government targeted. And guess what? Silicon Valley made their own currency to avoid Wall Street. Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto was most likely a Silicon Valley person. I mean, we all probably know who he is, and he's a Silicon Valley guy. So, you know, this has been a long-term war. So guess what? Silicon Valley Bank was an easy one to destroy. But then Signature Bank, this was, you know, two Sundays ago. I mean, they wake up on a Sunday, the New York Federal Reserve, you know, the New York Federal Bank decided on a whim that, hey, okay, Signature Bank is totally fine. They have no problems. There's been no run on deposits. Let's shut them down. They call the Federal Reserve Sunday morning. Why don't you shut this bank down? And Signature shut down. Barney Frank, who was on the board of Signature, he's even said, it was totally solvent. Like, what's the problem? Barney Frank, as you know, knows a thing or two about banking. He was the head of the House Financial Services Committee in 2008, 2009, knows a thing or two. He was like, Signature's fine. What's going on? Well, Signature was the largest crypto-friendly bank. Why were they targeted? And Silvergate and then Silicon Valley Bank. All these crypto-friendly banks were targeted. So we are seeing we're not seeing the behind the scenes. We're seeing kind of the surface of this ongoing war between Wall Street and the government and versus Silicon Valley, which, you know, and it's being fought over the domain of crypto. And these bank problems are a reasonable excuse. The Federal Reserve's got to like calm themselves down before this battle turns into a serious problem.
Yeah, it does now seem like in kind of retrospect, a little bit of a battle east versus west, but like Wall Street versus Silicon Valley and
Tupac versus Biggie all over again.
Tupac versus Biggie all over again. That's exactly right. And, you know, I don't know if it was targeted. I know there's lots of like cultural differences between Silicon Valley and Wall Street. Do you think, some of Wall Street was in Jerome Powell's ear, almost like, hey, you got private lending markets. They're kind of circumventing Wall Street. They're circumventing these traditional forms of funding. You know, why don't we knock them off the ledge?
Absolutely. Like, look, at the beginning of all this, there's issues of what's an ICO? Is it really an IPO? Should it be regulated? Then there's issues of, you know, Gary Gensler keeps saying, I mean, Gary Gensler is going insane. Like, I think the guy is literally going insane, where he's saying, I'm going to send a Wells notice, which means I'm investigating, you know, Coinbase for securities fraud. He still hasn't even, Coinbase is begging, please tell us the rules and we will abide by them.
They're saying, please let us know which ones are securities. We'll delist those right now. And they won't get a response.
Yeah. And like, the question is, you know, Gary Gensler has hinted that some or all cryptos are securities. By the way, who cares if they're securities? It just means they have to abide by new regulations and new laws. They have to follow the Securities and Exchange Act of 1933, which just means a little bit more disclosure, you know, and then they have to figure out for cryptos, which are decentralized, you have to figure out who's going to disclose what. Like, what does it mean that they're securities? Mm-hmm. And someone has to figure this out. But he hasn't done that. Instead, he's just started like randomly charging.
Play whack-a-mole.
Yeah. And you can't do that. And here's an important difference. Like, what is a security? So when I buy Apple stock, I get a piece of paper that says, James Altucher, you own 100 shares of Apple stock. And I can hang that on my wall and whatever. And then when I want to sell my Apple stock, I go to the bank, I give them a certificate, and I say, please sell this for me. Now, when I buy Ethereum, many of us think of Ethereum the same way. I want to buy Ethereum. I want to watch it go up in value and then sell it and make money. But that's not the real reason to buy Ethereum. The real reason to buy Ethereum is because you use it to make other decentralized applications. Ethereum is almost like, you could think of it as a programming language where you can use it to make the thousands of decentralized applications that are needed to build this newer, better financial ecosystem. And, you know, in that sense, it's not a security, it's functional. I don't say, you know, the Python programming language is a security. No, it's a programming language. So these crypto has actual use cases that and securities don't. Securities only say I own a piece of something. That is what a security is. So anybody who investigates this for more than 5 minutes will know that. And this is why Gary Gensler is getting a lot of pushback from other SEC commissioners. Like no judge has enforced right. anything Gensler has said because, and you know, Congress is debating this. Fortunately, the head of the Financial Services Committee now, crypto-friendly guy, the Prime Minister of the UK, crypto-friendly guy, Dubai is trying to be the center of crypto banking. These other places and people are taking crypto seriously, including high up, you know, the most powerful financial people in government in the US. So this will work itself out and it'll be fine. It's just that the panicky headlines are going crazy is the problem. And look, that's the problem. It could be self-fulfilling that, hey, everybody, all the banks are going to fail. Well, that could be self-fulfilling if everybody makes a run on the banks.
There's a big problem that faces the crypto industry that doesn't trigger, you know, 12, 18 months down the road. It triggers 12 to 18 days down the road. If you don't have a bank that can make payroll for your company, you're either forced to close up shop or you have to leave the U.S. to find a banking partner overseas. I mean, the crypto industry has so much potential to generate tax revenue to solve so many other of the United States problems. You know, you've got the Fed, you know, shooting themselves in one foot with inflation and then shooting themselves in the brain with the attitude they're taking towards crypto that could literally save them if they work together.
I mean, just think about the basic, I mean, there are so many like great use cases of crypto that we could spend hours talking about, but just think about the basic thing. Like, if I want to buy a stock, I can only buy that stock Monday through Friday, but not counting holidays, between 9:30 and a.m. and 4 p.m. That's an antique. That's a 100-year-old antique. Crypto, 24/7, low fees, instant trading, no problem. Basic use case, all right, is that you don't have to wait 10 a.m. Monday morning to walk into your local regional bank to get some cash out and to see a human teller who's got a line outside of his cubicle. Crypto banking is 24/7. Transfers could happen all over the world for pennies. Like, this is a multi-trillion dollar use case. That's, by the way, that's use case number two. Use case number one I described earlier, which is just protection against the failure of currencies. This is use case number two, is to evolve the banking system into the 21st century. And then there's use cases 3 through 10,000. But I don't know what they're thinking. Literally, though, by the way, you go to like Consensus, ETH in Denver and so on. The 20,000 programmers who show up there, they don't care about the price of crypto. They're busy working, building an entirely new financial ecosystem that's going to be awesome and great and solve so many of these problems, including inflation, deflation, banking issues, the antique, you know, stock exchange system, the antique. How do you buy a bond? How does the average person buy a bond? I don't even know how to buy a bond. You got to call someone and say, I want some bonds.
Yeah, most of the time you have to be like institutional, and there's like, if you want to buy government bonds, there's certain limits to how many you can buy and all sorts of different stuff. But I'm curious,
market my ass.
I'm curious, James, to get your thought on something that's kind of unfolding right now. The Fed CBDC, the central bank digital currency, which I think they've slated to like try and launch in July of this year. And I'm kind of learning a little bit more about this as Balaji Srinivasan has got his $1 million Bitcoin price target in 90 days. And I listened to something he says, you know, it's kind of like more of I'm provoking people to like, you know, get people excited and listen about $1 million Bitcoin and, you know, get them off zero and get to the life raft and all that stuff. But he's saying the 90-day sort of window is not arbitrary. It's the day, the countdown until when the Fed launches their new CBDC. And so I was like, oh, I didn't know it was coming that fast. Is that like the full rollout? Do you know anything about this?
I don't think it's happening that fast. I think they've been experimenting with the technology to do it, but I have not heard anything about a CBDC rolling out in 90 days. The last I heard was they've been doing some experiments with MIT about the technology and so on. Yeah. Now, the CBDC is an interesting thing because everyone's saying, and look, they might be correct, it's a bad thing. The US will know who is spending what dollar. I mean, the US will be able to see everything on the blockchain for that. And if you're, if you say some things against that the US doesn't like, they could turn off your, you know, your coins and whatever. You know, yes and no. Like, even right now, if the US doesn't like you, they could shut down your bank account. And everyone says, oh, but they need a subpoena or a warrant or whatever. Okay, is that really hard for the US government to do? Like, the IRS does it every single day. They shut down bank accounts and so on, which they should. Like, when people owe the money, they need to get it. But so I don't know how much the CBDC changes things politically. It's already a mess. But in general, a CBDC, I think, is great for crypto because it means the infrastructure has to grow. There's no infrastructure in place for a CBDC. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, right now, though, whether eventually a CBDC will come, whether we like it or not. And so my personal opinion is I don't want to engage. Like, I don't engage in all the arguing. Oh, is this good for people? Is this bad for people? Is this not private? Is this private? I do think this is good for crypto. I want to make money. So, you know, there are coins like Quant, which allows for the interoperability between different blockchains. That's going to be needed because every CBDC will probably be on a different blockchain. And you'll need some way to exchange them, like a Forex exchange. But I, when something's inevitable, I don't get all upset about it. I just try to figure out how to make money from it. And
yeah,
but I don't know.
Well, Quant's a great thing to point an eye to if that's the goal. But just to give some insight into FedNow.
I don't mean to push anything. Like, I actually don't own Quant, so I'm just saying that's a possible crypto that might be benefiting from CBDC. It's up a couple hundred percent in the past few months. But I do think the CBDC thing is inevitable.
Yeah, I would agree there. But FedNow is not a CBDC. What it is, it's a
technological... FedNow thing is the 90-day thing, I guess. It's called FedNow Instant Payments. What is that piece?
Yeah, so what it is we have something called ACH right now, Automatic Clearinghouse. And this still takes, you know, a few days to clear. So FedNow is a technological upgrade to that system specifically. So our debit card transactions can clear instantly. And we don't have to have these stupid pending things in our bank that screws up our available balance for real balance and stuff like that. So FedNow is actually a kind of a good thing, but it's not a central bank digital currency. It's not really a pathway to a central bank digital currency either.
If
anything, it's trying to compete with the PayPals and the Cash Apps of the world.
Yeah, I mean, this CBDC happening in 90 days, that strikes me as impossible. Like, the infrastructure is...
They would need congressional approval, I'd imagine.
And it would need infrastructure in place, like
wallets and shit.
Yeah,
like, right, exactly.
There's just nothing right now, as far as I know. Like, I think, I'm sure people are working on it, but I mean, I don't know where... Balaji's an interesting guy and he's very successful, but I don't know where he's getting that particular piece of information. And I no one else has said that to me. So
yeah, I got a chance to speak to the Federal Reserve at Money 2020 last year, and I talked to them about this, and they gave me some literature about FedNow to clear up any confusion. So, you know, if you want to take their word as truth, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more, then this is what is just an update to Automatic Clearinghouse, which is no big deal or any reason to be concerned. But as far as central bank digital currencies go, if all these other countries are doing it, and you have to have a way to exchange currency internationally, they really don't have a choice but to build one. And as James pointed out, Quant's Overledger is kind of the front runner to be the medium of exchange over there.
Yeah, I think that's...
who knows what's going to end up happening.
I think that's probably why Quant's been doing well. Maybe, you know, another one that's interesting is the Graph. Now, that's been kind of labeled an AI token, which maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But you could think of the Graph as like a search engine for blockchains. So that might play a role too. If people are really worried about issues of privacy on a CBDC, it might be because the Graph will allow the government to easily search what's going on the central bank digital currency blockchain. But again, I don't know of anything being actually built or happening right now. Again, the infrastructure is not even there yet fully for Bitcoin or Ethereum. And this is one thing that dampens a little bit the enthusiasm for crypto is because crypto is hard to buy and sell. Now, like, you guys are in it every day. You're in the business. You know, you run funds for it. You advise customers about it. But for the average grandma and grandpa in Indiana, if you say, well, you're going to need to use MetaMask, and what do you want to use? Pancake Swap or Sushi Swap? And which coin? You're going to have to buy that coin on Kraken because I can't find it on Sushi Swap. And crypto needs like a good front end, I feel. And this is not a problem. This is an opportunity. But, you know, this is why, in general, the infrastructure is not 100% there yet for the government to start playing in this as well.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. You kind of touched on something a bit that I want to circle back to just in regards to AI. There's, you know, a lot of hype around AI and ChatGPT, GPT-4, all these new models and stuff. And, you know, crypto coins that are like associated with AI have been doing really well. Do you have like a summary or a take on AI? How is it going to affect us? We were talking to Dr. Ben Gertzel the other day, and he made a bold claim saying that he thinks 75% of the world will be unemployed in the next 10 years due to AI, and that we're all going to be on basic income. And is that something that like resonates with you, or do you think that that's kind of way out there?
I think that's way out there because, look, there's been a lot of new technologies that have changed industries and put people out of business. Okay, the rise of the car made everybody in the horse business go out of business. Mm. The rise of, you know, telephones put everybody out of business in the telegraph business. The rise, back in 1995, companies like AT&T were worried about the internet. Are people going to start making phone calls through the internet and not need to pay AT&T? Well, that didn't happen. Now, industries will change. Like if you're a journalist, for instance, and I'm a newspaper, I'm going to fire you because I could just say, hey, what happened in Singapore today? Write an article on ChatGPT and it'll do it. Unless you're doing investigative, new, cutting edge journalism, you're out of a job. Mm-hmm. So there's many industries like that that will be replaced. Now, you know, like Tesla's building the Optimus robot in order to bring manufacturing cheaply back to the US. Manufacturing's outside of the US because labor is cheap. Well, this goes back to the Industrial Revolution. You know, Industrial Revolution, you know, unfortunately it took this to happen, but the Industrial Revolution made slavery more expensive than machines. So you know, that was the end of slavery in many countries, was the rise of the steam engine. The UK ended slavery in 1835. You know, US didn't end it, unfortunately, until 1865. And so jobs will change, industries will change, people will have to move. But AI is going to be a great addition to many industries that will grow. Biotech will grow. Of course, AI will grow. Robotics will grow. Crypto, banking. You know, think about crypto again also. Crypto has the ability to make everything an asset class. Like, what if I want to buy and sell shares of your podcast and exchange it for shares in someone's house down the road? You can do that all on a crypto exchange where everything is tokenized. And, you know, that's an amazing thing. The world of assets is going to explode, and that's going to require huge amounts of human participation. Now, it's going to require huge amounts of AI participation, but there's never been a technology that has made the economy smaller. Just because there's biotech doesn't mean doctors are out of work. Just because cancer is going to be, you know, cured in the next 10 years because of advances in immunotherapy doesn't put oncologists out of work. Quite the opposite. There's going to be more uses than ever of how to use this technology intelligently. So I think that's a little bit, we've seen those kind of excuses, those kind of arguments before, and they've never played out.
And going back to your point,
you know what the biggest climate change issue was in 1900? I mean, literally, this was the biggest, you know, people were worried about the climate in 1900 because horses dropped like 12 inches of shit every single day on the ground in New York City, on the roads of New York City. How are they going to get rid of all this manure every single day? And where was it going to go? This was a huge climate issue. And cars you know, rising technology solved an issue that nobody thought was solvable. So we haven't really seen the full effects of AI, but it's not going to be the case that we're all living on welfare because of a great technology.
Maybe another 100 years for the smell to stop lingering in New York City.
Oh, it's still lingering, but that's a little more jab like there. Human manure.
Yeah. Oh man. But going back to your earlier point, what you just described, being able to tokenize anything and exchange it for anything else. I just found a new platform called Proof of Reception that literally enables that in a peer-to-peer marketplace across the world. It's built by one of the heirs to South Korea's biggest families. And it's absolutely mind-blowing what they've done over there. And I was just staring at it with my eyes wide as he's describing it to me. And I said, dude, if you threw an AI on this thing, it would immediately match everyone's needs with everyone else's spare resources. And like Eden would dawn. And he's like, yeah, I know. So yeah, this is happening regardless of, you know, government intervention or opposition or even support. So it's really, really exciting to be in this space right now. So as a seasoned investor, seeing all this chaos going around you, all you see is volatility and opportunity. So where are you looking to place your bets for the incoming future?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, first off, you can't go wrong with Ethereum, right? Because even if you're, you know, some people are Bitcoin maximalists, and I respect that, you know, Bitcoin's the largest, so it's not horrible to have that in your portfolio. But if I was going to bet one of the two horses, probably it would be Ethereum. But even beyond that, I mean, again, there's Ethereum and then there's competitors like Solana and Cardano, but Ethereum has like 99.5% of the market of how to build decentralized apps. Doesn't mean, I like these other things as well. Solana, Cardano, they're going to be used. But I really like the picks and shovels tokens. There's something like 20,000 altcoins out there. Probably 95% of them or more are scams. But I really do like the picks and shovels tokens, the ones that are really building the infrastructure so that Bitcoin and Ethereum become really usable to the common user. Remember, 1998 and 1999, everyone was super excited about the internet, but there was no easy front end for it. You couldn't make a website. Like, the average person could not make their own website. And there was there wasn't enough users. So the same thing right now is true for crypto. There's no easy front end for the average person. And there simply aren't enough users. When were there enough users for the internet? Probably around 2005, when there was 1 billion users. And then you see the rise of Facebook, the rise of, you know, the real rise of Google, the rise of you know, Amazon becomes profitable, the iPhone, the iPad, all these things. So when crypto hits 1 billion users and it's a little easier to use, two issues that are trending upwards very quickly, then you're going to see a real breakout. But what's going to build this whole ecosystem? I like the picks and shovels plays. I mean, we talked about Quant that makes different blockchains, you know, talk to each other. The graph allows you to search blockchains. You know, you have kind of these post-merge tokens like SSV, which allows, you know, easier ways to build applications for staking. So all these kind of like nuts and bolts tokens that are building the infrastructure up, they don't issue press releases every day. It's hard to kind of find out day to day what's going on with them, but because they're hard at work, they're not public companies, they're just hard at work building this new ecosystem. So I think that's where it's interesting right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially with the analysis there on Ethereum. You know, somebody asked me the other day, like, hey, Bryce, what do you like more, Bitcoin or Ethereum? I'm like, well, I like them both for different reasons. But if I were to honestly say, what do I use more? I use Ethereum about 100 times more than I use Bitcoin. Bitcoin, I have it there and it sits on a wallet and just does it. Ethereum, you could use it. You're paying for different DeFi applications. You're able to have all sorts of different metaverse interactions and NFTs with Ethereum. But with Bitcoin, I mean, Bitcoin's getting more utility, but it's still a ways away. So I'm right now also in the camp that thinks that you know, if you had, you know, $100, you know, 75% of it probably is better off in Ethereum versus Bitcoin.
I agree. Like, I own Ethereum, but I don't own any Bitcoin. Now, if Balaji is correct, then I would have missed out on his $1 million. But, you know, Bitcoin is the biggest, but Ethereum already has many more transactions per day. So Ethereum is the biggest in terms of transactions per day. And Bitcoin, there's not as much emphasis on building the infrastructure to make fast, scalable transactions, whereas Ethereum is like neck deep in that. That's,
yeah,
you know, we just had the merge. Now we're going to have the surge, the splurge, the whatever. So it's all going to get a lot more faster and scalable.
Yeah, no, awesome. Well, James, we appreciate your time. One last question before we let you go, just for new folks who are in the audience, this might be the first time they've ever listened to a crypto podcast. What's one word of advice that you'd give a new crypto investor, new crypto trader, someone who's looking to knock it out of the park here?
Yeah, the thing is, don't go crazy with size. If the dream comes true, which we all on this podcast expect it will, you don't need to worry about size. Every one of these tokens that are real and not scams will go up thousands and thousands and thousands of percent. You only needed to put in $1,000 in Intel and Microsoft each when they went public, and you would have $3.5 million right now. Crypto's following a similar kind of exponential growth. So just keep, don't go crazy. Don't go broke. Keep position sizes small. You'll get rich if you buy just good, safe tokens. As Warren Buffett said, if a crypto is going to be around, I'm misquoting him. He says it about stocks, but if a crypto is going to be around in 20 years, it's going to be a very good investment now. So find the ones that will be around in 20 years.
Yeah. And don't bother holding it for even 20 minutes if you don't think it's going to be around for 20 years.
Yeah. Do not day trade crypto. That is a pathway to poverty.
Love it. All right. Well, James, thank you so much for spending the 45 minutes here with us. And we hope to have you back on again soon.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Yeah, I really admire what you're doing. You always put out really good content. Thank you.
Appreciate
Feelings
it.
Mutual, James. Thank you. Thanks.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.